Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20 and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app and everywhere at WIOXradio.org where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Going good, Ryan. How are you?
All right. What have you been up to?
I've been working in the woodworking shop a little bit. It's been a little cold. Be a lot of ice out there at the moment.
Yeah, we've been outside in the cold.
Pruning
some apple trees, man.
Yeah, we've been doing that at work.
Yeah, it was cold. But as long as it's not windy, it's not too bad. Right?
No. I mean, even yesterday, it was coldest day of the year, but it was sunny, relatively not windy.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad. I've had 32-degree days, much colder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, 3 years ago when it was 36 degrees every day, it seemed, during winter.
And raining.
It was raining. That was terrible. But, yeah, I've been splitting some firewood, cutting firewood. So getting ahead of that for a few years from now. And other than that, just burning wood, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, stoves are really efficient on cold days, I find. They draft better.
Yep.
Everything is better about them. They're really made for these really cold days.
Right. I agree.
You know?
No, mine's been... My firewood pile has definitely gone down this last week, but it's expected, right? January. It's going to be the coldest month. I look at it like, well, if I have half my wood now, then I'm great. I've got plenty.
Now, we're getting a winter, man. Yeah, today is going to be a little mild. Well, it was in the 30s this afternoon, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow's going to be in the 40s where I live, so upper 30s here in Delaware County. And after that, it's getting very cold, and the whole forecast is not maple sugaring weather. It's going to be below freezing in the highs.
Yep.
So we're having a kind of a real winter. Sometimes I tap maple trees in January. That is not going to happen, I think, this year, which I'm fine with. If I had to choose one month to tap, it would be February when it's still dark out when I get home.
Right.
March, you know, selfishly, I don't like tapping in March. It's light out, right? Thinking about other things.
True, true.
Yeah. But so it looks like we're on track for February.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Tell you in April.
I'll tell you in April, right? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Last year, we had weird years where Ryan and I, we tapped on the same day, had the same runs, but totally different outcomes on at the end of the year what we thought the season was. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, the trees I tap are on steroids, but I don't know. They might change this year.
Yeah, but even just when they ran was totally different than mine and pretty crazy. I made all my syrup in the last, 10 days. I made more than 50% in the last, or maybe it was the last 4 days. It was
amazing.
A very short amount of time.
Amazing.
Anyway, we'll figure it out when it comes.
I know it. We'll be talking about maple sugaring for sure later on this winter. But today, we're going to be talking about making baseball bats with Leather Stocking Hand Split Billet Company, and that's Director of Sales Dave Rama. Let me see if I can get him on. Dave, are you there?
Hey, I'm here.
All right.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you for coming on. And where are you calling from?
Well, I'm calling in transit, coming from the mill, heading home. Our mill is over close to Oneonta, and I'm a Delhi guy. So it's, you know, once I get home with the kids and everything, I figured it'd be better to call from the car and have a little bit of peace and quiet for the call. So I'm calling you in between my two posts.
Nice. Yeah, John is over in Delhi, too. So
that's right.
All right, John. Is that John Matteo? No.
No, no. John McNaught.
Okay. Well, there's only three Johns in Delhi, so I just took a stab.
Three Johns? No, it's more than that.
Jeez. Yep.
There's three Johns in my house sometimes.
Dave, where are you from, and what got you into this?
Well, I'm from Delhi. Grew up in Delhi, and like a lot of people grow up in Delhi, they want to leave. I went to college, and then I lived down in the city for a few years, and one of those deals where you kind of appreciate the area you grew up in after you leave for a few years. And I ended up coming back and working in my family business. Towns have a cattle auction company. And, hey, I worked with them for a couple of years, and then I got into real estate. And that's where I met the owner of Leather Stocking. I became his listing agent, sold some properties that he had listed. And we kept in touch over the years. And about 15 years ago, he started developing the process that we're using today, and calling me and saying, hey, you should come check this out. It's kind of neat what I'm working on. And I watched it kind of develop for a year or two, and then I jumped on board and been here for about 10 years now.
No kidding. Jeez. So tell us about Leather Stocking, Hand Split Billet Company. Is that it? Is that what it's called?
That's it. Yeah, you got it. So Leather Stocking is named, a lot of companies named Leather Stocking in this area, and that's all because, you know, Central New York was at one point called the Leather Stocking region, as made famous by the James Fenimore Cooper and the Leather Stocking Tale. So that's where the name originates from. My boss, the owner of the company, was a log broker for many years. That was his business. And then when the housing market collapsed, he kind of started looking for another opportunity. And what he saw at the time, he was listening to, the sportscasters talking about maple bats and how they were breaking. And they were saying at the time that they should just take maple out of the game, and because of the incidents of multiple piece fractures, people were getting injured when bats were breaking, and he knew why. And the reason was because they didn't have straight grain, and the billets weren't processed correctly. So he set out and started splitting each piece. And when you split each billet, you are following the natural grain of the wood, and that makes for a much stronger baseball bat.
So is this guy like a baseball fan? He just happened to be listening to this? Or
He's always been a huge baseball fan and just a wood guy that understands production processes. And, you know, again, just he understood. He was a log broker, so he had dealt with a lot of mills. He had sold logs to mills that were making blanks for baseball bats. But until we started splitting them, virtually all of the baseball bat blanks were made at sawmills. And, you know, the process at a sawmill is much different than that of a split mill, which we are. When you're sawing, you're trying to, you know, maximize utilization and get as many pieces out of a log as you possibly can. And often what happens when you're sawing is you can saw through the tangential grain. So when everybody looks at a baseball bat, they look at the radial grains to determine how straight the grain is in the baseball bat. But if you turn that baseball bat 90 degrees, the face grain and the grain running through that, the tangential grain, is equally important.
Yeah.
The trouble is you can't really see it with the naked eye. So in 2009, Major League Baseball hired an outfit to help them try to reduce the multiple piece fractures that were occurring. And one of the things that they implemented was the ink dot test. So from that point on, any baseball bat used in Major League Baseball will have an ink dot at on the handle. And what that ink dot is supposed to do is basically show you the grain direction in that tangential grain, which again is virtually impossible to see with the naked eye, but when the ink bleeds into the grain, you can kind of see the grain direction. So that kind of highlights what we do, our core differentiator. When you split billets for baseball bats, virtually everyone is going to have straight grain from end to end in that tangential face.
Yeah, I mean, if you split firewood by hand, which John and I do, you can picture that. I mean, it does split along the grain sometimes, usually, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times it doesn't go straight up and down. A lot of times there's a little bit of a twist.
Yeah, definitely.
So each split is going to follow that same line, and when you hold it up, you end up having a straight grain piece of wood. So, you know, when we started this, It was a tough sell to bat makers who had been doing it a certain way for a long time, and our process is more expensive, it's certainly more difficult to produce. And at the time, coming in, trying to tell people that the way they've been doing it was flawed. It's like telling somebody that, hey, I've been doing this for 30 years. I couldn't have been doing it wrong for 30 years. But fast forward to today, and virtually almost every bat in Major League Baseball now comes from a split billet. So we've helped kind of up the ante on what's acceptable for the material for a baseball bat and how it's processed.
So, okay, if most of them are coming from hand-split billet, is it producing a better quality product that's safer? Are we seeing the lack of better term efficacy of that?
Yes, multiple piece fractures. So every year they have a wood bat makers meeting for Major League bats. Bat companies that are approved for selling bats to Major League players. And so every year we attend that meeting and we watch the numbers drop dramatically. The number of multiple piece fractures is what they've been tracking, and it's gotten down to a point where, the proof is in the pudding. And they knew which companies were using split billets, which were still using sawn blanks. And so they pushed more and more for more companies to use split billets. And as a result, there's far less multiple piece fractures in the game today than there were a decade ago.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is making baseball bats with Leather Stocking Hand Split Billet Company. And we're talking to their director of sales, Dave Rama. Dave, how would you define a billet?
A billet is actually just a generic term for a homogeneous piece of wood, a shaped piece of wood. Our billets are dowels, essentially. And our standard length is a 37-inch dowel, and they're rounded out to just over 2 3/4 diameter. So just picture a long dowel. We sell those by the pallet load. And each pallet is 333 billets. Each billet makes a baseball bat. So we do the processing, the drying, grading, and the doweling. And then we sell those billets to wood bat companies all over the world. And then they put them on their CNC lathes, or some guys are still turning by hand. And they carve the various models, the desired models that they're trying to make.
So when I think of baseball bats, and I haven't played since I was very small, I think of Louisville or something. Like, where do these billets go? Louisville Slugger or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, there are hundreds and hundreds of wood bat companies. Baseball is very popular, obviously, here in the continental U.S., but also all over the world, Korea, Japan, China, starting to gain some popularity. And there's bat manufacturers all over the world. As you mentioned, Louisville, that's the name that most people think of, because they're one of the first. But there are virtually hundreds of bat companies out there that specialize in baseball bats.
All right. So what kind of wood do you get? I mean, I think most people think of ash, right? Is there other, you mentioned maple?
It is. That's definitely the common perception. Ash at one time was far and away, ash and hickory were both very popular for baseball bats. We're located about 20 minutes away from Cooperstown. I like to go and look at the bats and how they've changed over the years. Try to go about once a year, go to the Hall of Fame and check it out. It's always enlightening. And you're right. A lot of them were ash bats early on. And then in the 90s, Barry Bonds was using a maple bat when he set the new record. And from that point on, maple became more and more popular and
currently, maple is about 85% of the wood bat business, hard maple. So hard maple has definitely taken its place as the top wood species for baseball bats.
That's weird, because that's kind of precedes emerald ash borer, even, right? I mean, if it's in the 90s.
It actually worked out, you know, as the ash is kind of dwindling down and the supply of ash is dying down, so is the demand. So it couldn't have worked out better from a baseball standpoint.
I had no idea.
Yeah, the emerald ash borer has not had much of an effect on us. Fortunately, I mean, if the bats were still made out of ash, we'd be scrambling to figure out another alternative. But the difference in characteristics, maple bats, maple, just it hits a little bit harder. You know, power hitters tend to prefer maple. And, you know, the placement hitters, a lot of the guys trying to be placement hitters, ash offers a little bit more flexibility. And so ash was popular for that reason, and I think any players currently today that are swinging ash, most of them like to think of themselves as placement hitters, whereas with maple, you just get a little bit more rigidity and a little bit more pop off the bat.
Wow, I had no idea. What about anything else? I mean, you mentioned hickory. Is the MLB using that, or is that just some other side market somewhere?
Hickory is still approved. The problem with hickory is the weight. It is extremely dense and almost too heavy for modern day hitters. And so hickory is, you know, at this point, very, very, very few people are swinging hickory. Just mostly attributed to the density and weight issues. Ash, the other 15 to 20% would be ash, and yellow birch is also approved for Major League Baseball, and a lot of the players that like ash are loving birch. So birch is starting to gain popularity.
I was going to say good, because there's a lot of birch growing in these Catskill Mountains, and
it's
available.
I feel like in a lot of the Catskills there's a lot of black birch. I mean, we have some yellow birch, but it's usually not the best of quality, at least not down here. How come you don't use black birch?
It's not approved by Major League Baseball. It can be used for baseball bats on the amateur side of things. But it's very black birch and yellow birch have very, very similar properties. I think that black birch tends to be a little bit denser. A little bit heavier for the most part.
Okay.
But it's very similar. And a lot of mills, they're interchangeable, whether it's yellow, black birch, are virtually interchangeable. But as for baseball bats, in the major leagues anyway, black birch is not listed as an approved species.
No kidding.
Believe it or not, white birch is gaining some traction. Again, not for Major League Baseball, but white birch is a little bit less dense. It's kind of comparable to the difference between hard maple and soft maple. But for fungo bats, coaches bats, even youth bats, white birch is gaining some popularity as well.
Yeah, but who's cutting those logs? Must be coming from the north.
Yeah. Well, we're actually, I think part of the reason we're located where we are in the sweet spot for the wood bat industry. The weights and densities and properties that are required for wood baseball bats, we're essentially at the epicenter of where that is. If you drew a 300-mile radius from Oneonta, that's basically where our logs are coming from. New York, New England, Pennsylvania. That is pretty much the only area in the world. There's some wood in Michigan that would work, and I guess parts of Russia. But other than that, all the wood for baseball bats is essentially coming from our area.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you looking for? Can you describe, you know, what makes a good billet? Why you chose the tree you chose? And can you even tell you know, on the stump if it's going to make something nice?
Absolutely. So we have a few different log buyers that specialize in buying logs for us, and we have a forester on staff. We're continually looking to add to our roster of professional log buyers and foresters as well, as we're looking for more and more material as the company continues to grow. I myself do not know all of the ins and outs of the log business per se. If you sent me out to buy the right logs, I would be I wouldn't be the best person. As you know, I'm sure it's a craft just like anything else. You know, the guys that we have, a couple of our log buyers worked for veneer companies for many, many years, and there's probably just a couple handfuls of people that can kind of do what we need them to do in terms of procurement. We are typically looking for a high-end log. A bat log is kind of, it's an in-between log. You know, typically you're looking for straight grain. And you can usually tell by the outside if it's going to be a nice quality log, just based on the composition of the bark structure and understanding the area. You know, trees, just like any crop, are going to be affected by the soil conditions. You know, the sunlight and all of those effects have an important role in the development of a tree. So our guys that are buying logs, we buy a fair share from sawmills. You know, we work with brokers, we work with loggers, we buy standing timber, and you know, the guys who are very good at buying logs can look at a tree and have a pretty good idea of what's going to be inside it. The structural components are for us, of course, of highest importance, but we also pay attention to the aesthetics. Every industry has a bit of a different outlook and idea of what they're looking for. But we're using all sapwood and, you know, trying to find logs with the least amount of color and the straightest grain possible.
Yeah, I noticed that about the color. What does that matter? Are baseball players just prefer that? Lighter colors?
Yeah, I mean, it's aesthetics. You know, the lighter color, in addition to the splitting, another one of the benefits of our billets is that we dry everything in a vacuum. All our billets are dried in a vacuum kiln. So there's just like processing the billets or the squares and the dowels. There's a number of different ways to dry them. Conventional drying, air drying. You know, conventional drying was the most popular method for many, many years. In vacuum drying, it preserves the color of the wood because you're essentially disallowing the oxidation that occurs. Looks like taking a bite out of an apple and then leaving it on the counter, it's going to start to turn brown. So that happens during the drying process if you're conventional drying or air drying. So our billets have especially the maple, has a very bright white look. Now, a lot of bats are painted many different colors, but a fair amount of them are also just natural, and I think that white appearance just makes people like it more, the aesthetics. It looks nicer.
It's interesting, yeah. You wouldn't think, I guess they like the flashy bat. Right.
They like the flashy bats, yeah. That's a big part of it.
I mean, maybe that's one more reason to get away from ash, because, I mean, it typically has a much larger heartwood component in the log than, say, a maple does.
Yeah.
Unless it's red maple, all right?
It is. True. I mean, maple, typically, if there's heartwood in the billet, it's going to crack when you dry it. You know, the heartwood and ash is a little bit more resilient. It doesn't, you know, you still get a fair amount of heartwood even in the ash billets. Typically, if it's outside of the handle, we don't look at it as a defect in ash. Whereas in maple, you know, just the composition of that deadwood in the center just doesn't dry the same, and it tends to break apart.
Right.
Is that a problem with red maple having such a big heartwood, or no?
Yeah, maple, red maple, it's a little bit different than hard maple. We do process a fair amount of soft maple as well, which could include red and some other types of maple. But the heartwood in red maple doesn't seem to break apart quite as much, but we still try to only use the sapwood if we can.
Interesting.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is making baseball bats with Leatherstocking Hand Split Billet Company, and we're talking to their director of sales, Dave Rama. We're going to take a break, but I want to ask him next to exactly define this slope of grain. All right.
I've been throwing horseshoes over my left shoulder. I've spent most all my life searching for that four-leaf clover. Some days bring sunshine, and some days bring rain. No matter how it all turns out, we still play the game. That's the way baseball goes, babe. That's the way it goes. Cloudy days or skies of blue, some you win and some you lose. Losing makes me sorry, ain't no need to worry. No matter what, we love the game. That's the way baseball goes. Our skies are blue, some you win, some you lose. Losing makes me sorry, now there ain't no need to worry. No matter what, we love the game. That's the way baseball goes. No matter what, we love the game. That's the way baseball goes. Now let's play ball.
Well, there isn't much more American than baseball and Merle Haggard.
How did you find that song?
I don't know, but it happened.
I've never heard that one. That's a good one.
Yes, sir. If you're just tuning in, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is making baseball bats with Leatherstocking Hand Split Billet Company. So, to us people who don't know how to make a baseball bat, and we watch the game and we see a baseball just fall apart into, what do you say, multiple fractures? What
yeah,
is it?
Multiple piece fracture. That's the term. When basically when the bat breaks and part of the bat goes flying through the air.
Yeah. And, you know, that's confusing to people. And to me, before talking to you and researching your website, I just thought, well, that's because they're using maple. And ash.
Right.
Right? And ash trees are dying. And they must be using, you know, this species that is just not as good. But then I start reading your website, and you start throwing out some big terms like straight tangential face grain is critical and slope of grain. Can you explain? I know you kind of already hit upon this, but I think this is really important.
Yeah, it is. Slope of grain is basically the direction of the grain down the length of the baseball bat. Now, again, in the radio grain, it's pretty easy to see. Those are the growth rings on the tree. And so when we're grading billets, what we're looking for is straight grain that's going to go throughout the length of the handle. And it's been determined they've done a lot of testing on this, and basically they've determined that if the slope of grain, the angle of the grain going down the length of the bat is over 3 degrees, the strength of the bat starts to diminish greatly. And once you get over 6-7 degrees, it gets very, very weak and can break apart pretty easily. So basically, when we're looking at it, you know, trying to figure out what 3 degrees means in layman's terms, it's basically you have you would be allowed up to 1 inch of movement left to right in 20 inches. So we look for straight grain 20 inches through the handle, which that 20 inches brings you up to, you know, about the middle of the transition where the bat starts to get thicker. So in other words, if you follow one of the grains from the 20 inch mark down to the end of the knob, if it's moving left to right more than an inch, it's what we would call a poor slope of grain.
Now, go ahead.
Well, and that would apply in the radial grain as well as the tangential grain.
So is this tangential grain, let me try to visualize it, is that what you see when you quarter saw like a white oak or a sugar maple or a sycamore? You get all these magnificently different grain patterns that definitely aren't the growth rings of the tree. That's what's coming out through the log, through the lumber. To anyone who's ever...
That's correct. It would be either the outside or the inside of the tree would be the tangential face.
Right. So you don't want that in the bat.
Well, it would be in the bat, but you don't want to have it. You don't want a poor slope of grain.
Gotcha.
So what happens is, you know, again, if a sawmill is sawing the log, there's really no way to most trees don't grow straight up and down, especially hard maple trees. You know, typically they're going to be affected by the sunlight. They're going to be reaching for the sun, or maybe there's a wind pattern that you know, it's got a branch down low, and they tend to twist as they grow slowly over time. A lot of trees tend to twist gently. So that is where the tangential grain comes into place. And if the tree doesn't grow perfectly straight up and down, as few of them do, that is going to have an effect on that tangential grain. So when a sawmill goes to process that log, there's no way to correct that. And so that is the flawed process of sawing blank for wood baseball bats.
Got it. So, what is this process of hand splitting? I mean, you don't have guys in there with mauls chopping apart wood, do you?
Well, it's, we use log splitters. You know, they're hydraulic log splitters. Standing vertical, and you know, we have each one requires a guy basically rolls the log in, stands it up, and then they're 40 inch bolts. We process the logs at about 40 inches, so then they just split it all the way around, and then we have like a triangular stave comes out of that. We end up, you know, the result is just like firewood. You end up with that triangular piece. So then the difficult task, we came up with a proprietary method that's one of our best kept secrets. Taking the task of taking that triangular stave and then making it a uniform square is the part of the process where we've implemented some equipment to allow us to do that in a pretty swift manner. So we go from that triangle, the triangle split, right, to a rough square. Because we're drying in a vacuum kiln, basically, when you're drying in a vacuum kiln,
all of the heat is distributed through aluminum plates inside the kiln. So hot water flows through those plates. So because of that process, basically you have one course of wood, then a plate, then another course of wood, then another plate. And because of that process, all of the wood that you're drying has to be basically a uniform size so that they're all touching the plates. So as part of our process, the guys, we split them, and then we cut them into rough squares before being loaded into the kilns. Then I'll just walk you through the rest of the process since we're here. After the wood is dried, and when you're drying in a vacuum kiln, the drying time is much shorter than that of a conventional kiln. We can take a wood from, it basically can be a tree today, and next week we could have it presented as a baseball bat blank. So in under a week, the drying time, the wood is cured in under a week. So then after it's taken out of our kilns, we run it through a molder and we dowel it. And then it's graded. And the grading process is quite an arduous process. We've got four different grades in hard maple, and that could be from the very top end to our lowest grade, our economy grade, which is for souvenir bats, commemoratives, and things of that nature. So after they're doweled, they're graded, and then we have a saw that trims them to exact lengths. It cuts each billet to 37 inches. Most baseball bats are 34 inches or under. I think, 32 to 34 inches is probably the most common size for baseball bats. So each one has a few inches of fluff on each end where the maker can, carve out the model that they're looking for.
It's got to be kind of a nerve-wracking job, the guy splitting it, because he's got to know what he's doing. Because he's essentially taking a really good quality log, almost a veneer log, or in some cases a veneer log, and then cutting it up into lengths? Oh, no. Oh, man, I like to see some loggers like, what are they doing to that log? No, that's for baseball bats.
if they come through too small, that's a huge problem. We don't get the dowels. If they come through too big, then we're wasting wood.
Mm-hmm.
And as it is, the nature of our process, we've had people from, traditional sawmills come and see how we're doing it, and they, a lot of them will just shake their head and say, "What are you guys are throwing away a lot of wood."
Imagine
the waste. I mean, about 50% of each log goes out the back of the mill in a chipper. Again, in a proper sawmill, in a traditional sawmill, utilization is key. We pay a lot of money for the wood, so they don't want to waste any of it. But again, just the benefits of having that straight grain from end to end outweigh any waste considerations.
Yeah, it sounds like the baseball bat is it's got to be perfect, right? I mean, otherwise it's going under a lot of forces, I would imagine, more than anything else. No, I don't know.
It goes through a lot. I mean, perfection in the wood industry is a term rarely used, but I mean, the process certainly makes for a safer baseball bat that's going to perform better. And typically when a bat breaks, a bat made from a split billet, you get what is called a brash failure. So you'll get a break that's on one side. If you envision a handle of a baseball bat, essentially you'll get a crack in one side and then a vertical split that kind of goes up a little way, but the other side stays intact. Whereas if it has bad slope of grain, you would have basically a spear on one side. When it breaks, you end up with a sharp point on the handle side, and then a sharp point on the barrel side as well. So it's how often they break and how they break. Those are two of the key differences.
So Dave, I use a wooden axe handle. How does this differ from an axe handle, a good axe handle, from a baseball bat, I guess?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because, as we continue to grow, we start looking into other markets. Now for axes, you know, cost is typically going to be a really important factor. There are some companies out there that I think are using split stock for axe handles, but they're very boutique manufacturers. You don't see a lot of that. Most axe handles are made out of hickory. Hickory seems to be still the primary species for axe handles, and a big part of the reason is because the weight doesn't really matter. Hickory, you know, like ash, you tend to, a lot of the time you get better grain. It seems like one of the reasons that ash was used primarily early on, you know, 100 years ago, all bats were made out of split billets. You know, there was even Louisville early on, way back in the day, they were using split billets. That's what everybody did. Over time, to get costs down, a lot of companies, you know, like Louisville, their proprietary method, they have their way for, they basically have a large hole punch that will take a log and extract billets out of it. You can just envision a large hole punch. It's a much cheaper method, and utilization is much higher. But again, getting back to the key point, they're not hand split. So for axe handles, you know, they're typically bigger. You know, the difference between an axe handle and a baseball bat. With a baseball bat, the handles a lot of times are an inch, sometimes 0.9 inches. They're going up against a fastball that's coming at you 80 to 100, 105 miles an hour. So, you know, it's really put to the test a heck of a lot more. So it's much easier to break a baseball bat that's improperly produced than it is an axe handle.
Yeah, I could see you guys getting into that because I kind of a axe handle snob. I brought from Grands Forest Brooks, you know, and that axe handle was not cheap, man. I bet you that's what they use because that's why it's so expensive.
It could be. They're actually a company I've reached out to in the past, so far without success, but you know, just throwing feelers out there.
Yeah.
Looking at other markets. Once we get to a point where we've fully saturated the baseball bat market, we'll want to start looking into other opportunities. And you know, whether it be axe handles, or even you know, pool cues or drumsticks, I think there's a lot of opportunities out there where the split concept and the straight grain could be a great core differentiator that would make a big difference.
No, that totally makes sense. If you're just tuning in, or you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., tonight's topic is making baseball bats with Leather Stocking Hand Split Billet Company, and we're talking to their director of sales, Dave Rama. Dave, I had some questions that a member wanted us to ask, and is there a part of the tree that is used more than another, and he also wanted to know whether it's near the heartwood or sapwood. I guess you kind of answered this already. And also, he wanted to know whether the reaction wood plays any role compared to the tension wood, and do some players prefer maple over ash? I guess you kind of answered that too.
Yeah, all good questions. Typically, for the tree, we're taking the first bolt. We're taking the first 10 feet or so is going to have the least amount of defects that are going to affect what we do. So typically, you know, the biggest part of the tree down at the base is going to have the straightest wood, the straightest grain, and the cleanest wood. You know, once the tree starts to break, it's no longer useful to us. So the sapwood, again, unless there's 4 inches of sapwood, it's probably not going to work for us. That's definitely one of the core aspects that we're looking for is that sapwood. And typically the first bolt, second bolt, we don't go up much higher than that. So we're taking wood that a lot of times the wood that we're processing would be great for the veneer mills and other mills out there that are just looking for the cleanest part of the tree. So that's typically what we're after. Stress in wood is something that you encounter. I believe that the vacuum drying process can help alleviate some of that. There are some natural tensions that are going to occur
But typically, that isn't a huge problem or factor for us.
Okay. Yeah, what I learned is I didn't realize. So maybe it sounds like maple is the preferred, and it's the majority of the market, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we still process a fair amount of ash, but maple is by and large the most predominant species that we process. And again, we're always looking for wood in our area, especially. We're in the breadbasket of where we want to be.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how much of your market comes out of the Catskill Mountains for the wood you're gathering?
As much as possible, a fair amount, and we're actively looking and always looking for, opportunities. The hard maple price has skyrocketed over the last year, for a number of reasons. It seems white woods have gained favor, and because of that, log prices for maple logs have gone up quite dramatically. So. For any listeners in the area that have woodlots, it'd be a great time to get in touch with us, as we have, crews that will go out and cut it and paying good money for hard maple right now.
Any acreage limits on that, do you know of, Dave?
It's all going to depend on the wood that's there. I mean, we've had 20-acre lots that hadn't been cut in 20 years, and boy, there can be a lot of great material in there.
Sure.
But at the same time, we've seen 200-acre lots that were cut 5 years ago that, there isn't a lot that we can use in there. So it really depends on, how long it's been since the last time it was logged. They say the healthiest forests are managed, and you cut out the big trees every 10, 15, 20 years is a good practice. That allows, that changes the canopy, allows the smaller trees to grow and have a good shot at the sunlight. Really, there isn't a limit. It's more just a matter of the timber that's on there. I think a good rule of thumb is, if you try to hug a tree and you have a hard time getting your fingers to touch, they're ready to go. Most of the trees that we're processing, the hard maple, is usually between 40, 35 to 60 years old, is a good mature tree for what we're looking for. But that can vary as well.
Well, as far as I know, Delaware County and the Catskills has, the most potential, right, taps for maple sugaring. So, in the world, so I guess you're in the area for hard maple.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, how many billets per year does your company sell? I mean, what kind of volume are we talking?
Well, every year we increase our capacity every year we just keep growing to try to get to a point where we can satisfy the global demand, which we still have a few years to get there. If we get the right log supply, that's been the challenge the last year is getting the logs. We've had a lot of demand, we can process at this point. We're ready to process up to 1 million blanks a year, if we can get the timber.
Yeah.
Probably 500,000 to 1 million is kind of where we're trying to be.
Wow. Now, what do you do with some of your waste? Do you have any markets for any of that going on right now?
Yeah, we've developed markets. We try to, we have markets for all of it. Basically, from the sawdust that we manufacture, the shavings that we get, we sell shavings to farms by the truckload. It's all vacuum dried, extremely dry wood. It works really well for bedding, things of that nature. We sell chips. We work with pellet mills and a number of various other mills that will, buy some of that offal. And then on the billet end, our processed goods, we sell to furniture manufacturers, our dowels, we sell down to pieces that are an inch and a half long. I have a couple customers that purchase thousands and thousands of pieces from us that are very, very short. So even if there's a defect that might prohibit a good full-size baseball bat, we can still sell that material to secondary markets. We try to sell it all. We can.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well,
and we also,
yeah,
some of the offal is also used for, goes right back into our drying. So all our drying, all the heating for all our buildings is powered by our boiler room. We have a steam boiler, so we end up, you know, using a lot of the green chips to just supply our heat.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that about sawmills and stuff, that they use their own power. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on. If someone wanted to contact you or the leather stocking, how would they do that? We got a woodlot.
Well, we if they've got a woodlot, they can certainly find us on, we have a website, Leatherstocking Hand Split Billet Company. If you do a search for that, our website should pop right up. Our office number is 607-436-9082. So they can certainly call, or they can send an email through our website, which would likely come to me. We would certainly welcome any calls, and I think anybody who's got a good woodlot would be happy to hear the pricing and see where prices are currently at. It's a good time to take a look at that.
Well, Dave, thank you for taking the time and coming on tonight.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, and have a good night.
You as well. Thanks. Bye.
All right. If you just missed the show on From the Forest, which is every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., that was Making Baseball Bats with Leatherstocking Hand Split Billet Company over there in Oneonta. That was Dave Rama, Director of Sales. And next week, I think we got Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, third Wednesdays. And after that, now that's in my head, I think we're talking to Cornell about their moose study, because John and I, or at least me, I don't know anything about moose.
I know very little. Very interested to learn more.
Yeah.
Especially New York moose.
New York moose. I don't know anything about them.
They exist.
Yeah, they exist. So we got about 20 seconds left. You got anything, John?
Oh, I don't know.
What's for dinner?
Walleye filet.
Walleye filet?
Yeah.
We have this in the freezer, John?
Sure do.
No kidding.
Well, you don't know about me, I guess.
What else is there?
Who knows?
What the hell's going on?
Yeah, no, walleye. Oh,
you gonna fry them up in bear fat? What are you doing?
I think they're going to get breaded and baked and do sandwiches. I like a tartar sauce sandwich.
Oh, yeah?
With fish.
That sounds good.
It is, with pickles. Mm, a little hot sauce. Man, you're making me hungry.
All right. Well, that's all the time we got, and thanks for listening. See you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear.
so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long-forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con men con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps. And to an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more, for the old man has come home from the forest.
WIOX is supported by the generosity of our listeners and the following underwriters. Vly Mountain Spring Water, delivering fresh, pure spring water from the heart of the Catskill Mountains to homes and businesses from Kingston to Saugerties, Roxbury to Delhi, Walton to Ellenville, New Paltz to Rosendale. 5-gallon bottles of spring water and dispensers for sale or rental. Vly Mountain Spring Water, 845-254-6508 or VlyMountainSpringWater.org. Caldwell Banker Timberland Properties, with 6 offices located throughout the Catskills, serving buyers and sellers of land and homes for over 40 years. Timberland Properties agents live, work, and play locally, with offices in Margaretville, Stamford, Roscoe, Delhi, Sydney, and Boyceville. TimberlandProperties.net, 845-586-3321. Catskill Mountain Cleaning, specializing in Airbnbs, vacation homes, and private residences. Cleaning, firewood stack, trash removal, and small pest exterminating. Serving the Catskills region, including Margaretville, Andes, Bovina, and the surrounding area. More information at 607-261-1674 or CatskillMountainCleaning.com.
Hi, this is Alan Reynolds, host of Pure Country, Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6, and the Pure Country Radio Truck Stop Sunday nights from 10 till midnight on WIOX Roxbury. Serving New York's Catskills region at 91.3 FM, WIOXRadio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
Hi, this is Jack, and I do Jack's Jams. I'm on every Wednesday from 7 to 8, and I play 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s music. And enjoy.